is said the palace is well protected. The gateway disappears during times of unrest, pestilence, and plague.
Aye, but the passing clouds are gone, and no one's seen it. Wait, there it is.
Shut tight. Nobody on the ramparts that I can see. How do we gain entrance?
There's a big bell pull. Try it.
Aye.
Who rang that bell?
We seek entrance.
For what purpose?
We're here under an enchanter's orders.
Key word given. Gatekeepers, proceed.
Lockpins out.
Lift the gate.
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkon Theater.
This is episode 26.
Traversity, Demons and Demigods, The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Chapter 24 continues.
There's no doubt. Calron is here, nearby. Gawain looked into the island's trees, then shut his eyes and concentrated on the steady psychic whine of the shackles. And not moving. After waking the previous evening and continuing their voyage deeper into the marsh, the close-knit trees and narrow tributaries had been left behind for wider, more uncertain territory. With Gawain's light spheres floating ahead of the raft intermittently, when starlight or moonlight were insufficient, they had made their way around numerous obstacles. Rocks, tree branches jutting out of the water, and unexpected eddies that could draw a raft into bramble-choked coves. Until dawn, when they reached a large island where Calron's trail led.
Damned helpful, the magic of those shackles.
Thasgar scowled at the moss-hung trees.
There's no way we would have guessed which island he was on.
That's certain.
There's footprints over here.
Inspecting the shore, Gon pointed up the slope in the direction the tracks went.
If he isn't moving, perhaps he's still asleep.
I wouldn't wager that a safe assumption.
Clough looked in the direction Gon had pointed. I'll know for sure in a moment. The enchanter extracted his crystal from its pouch and scryed for the dark mage. A clear image of Calron sleeping on a bed of leaves came into focus. He is asleep presently. But he sought the druid's image, but encountered only darkness. He's alone now. Assuming his inability to conjure her reflection was due to never having seen her clearly, he had seen her only while in Calron's company, he ceased scrying and put his crystal away. 'twill be best if Clough and I scout the immediate area first.
No.
He raised a hand to halt Flana's protest. No, it's too risky for all of us to plunge in right away. I won't underestimate Calron this time. He may have laid some traps for protection, magically triggered snares of the like we place around our campsites.
Do you intend to confront him alone?
Gawain turned to meet the priest's pale gaze. Of course not, and I welcome any suggestion as to a better way to approach this man. If we set off a trap, I'm better equipped to deal with it. And it wouldn't do to have all of us caught if we all went in at once, would it? He smiled at his wife's worried expression. Glink will be beside you, love, ready to lead the way to me and Clough if we find trouble. She drummed fingers anxiously on the grip of her bow.
Let's just get this over with.
Clough went to where Gon waited, Gawain in his wake, and the three men surveyed the trail in the increasing light of the early morning. Reaching out with his sixth sense, the enchanter sought any traces of magic that might hint of a spell laid ahead of them. Finding none, he glanced at Clough and tilted his head toward the trees, then gestured his fingers at his friend. The elf shimmered to invisibility. Gawain followed, clasping his cloak and fading from view, then the two of them proceeded silently up the slope. Upon reaching the top, they lost the tracks among others in a beaten path that led through the forest.
Which way and how close?
The two of them crouched and studied the path. Again, sensing the psychic whine of the shackles, stronger than ever before, Gawain pointed in the direction he felt them, knowing that despite their mutual invisibility, his love brother could see a spectral outline of his arm. Having never followed a magic beacon like this, I can't be sure. He's very near. But we have a problem. He gestured at the large tracks in the mud of the path. Clough nodded grimly.
A swamp dragon, no doubt. And it moves along here regularly. Perhaps Charon has acquired a new watchdog?
Of a sort. The dragon probably doesn't know he's here, but provides an excellent foil for intruders.
Will it be able to see us?
They can sense the unseen only within a close radius, so don't try to be friendly.
I'll remember that.
Clough stood and headed in the direction Gawain had pointed, soon catching a sound like that of an animal eating something. They followed the sound a little further until they reached a clearing with a ring of bushes and surrounding what appeared to be a nest from whence the uncomfortable sounds and acrid smells of swamp water and the coppery scent of fresh blood emanated. Two, the tug of the shackles was very strong.
Too small to be a dragon. And Calron's here somewhere.
Whatever it was had noticed them. Signaling his second to stand off to the side, Gawain decided to take advantage of the creature's diverted attentions, unclasped his cloak to become visible, and stepped back while making whimpering noises of his own. He discovered he had taken on more than he expected. In the next instant, something large, the size of a pony, tore out of the bushes and jumped into the clearing directly at him. Out of reflex, he spun out of its way and clasped his cloak again, shimmering into invisibility but to no avail. The dragonling had caught his scent and followed it ruthlessly, forcing Gawain to leap behind the nearest tree before the razor-sharp teeth could make a successful snap at his leg.
Yo, hey!
Yelling and thrashing the bushes around its nest, Clough did his best to distract the creature. To his immediate chagrin, it worked, the obviously ravenous dragonling turning to pursue easier prey, a shred of Gawain's breeches hanging from its incisors. Though its size did not daunt him, the elf could not help but be dismayed at the sheer ferocity of the dragonling as it lunged directly at him, foreclaws and teeth bare. He managed to keep his blade before him and thrust it into the creature's side as he jumped out of its way. Despite Clough's nip, the dragonling twisted in the air like a cat, the webbing between its torso and forelegs, underdeveloped wings, giving it some aerial maneuverability, and landed facing it, slowing its approach as it considered the unseen sting of this invisible creature. Keeping his blade poised, Pluff backed away. Trying to discern its unseen prey, the dragonling prepared to spring again and crouched low, yellow eyes settling on where it smelled the elf. Seeing the feral gleam, Cluff knew his next sword stroke would have to be a fatal one, while part of him wondered if Gaewon had been struck down. He was allowed no more time to think, the creature throwing itself without further warning, jaws open, teeth bared, foreclaws wide. Suddenly, a cluster of fiery spears flew over the elf's head, surrounding the dragonling with magical fire and shortening its flight. It fell ungracefully to the ground, shuddered violently, and died. Cluff jumped to his feet, having lost his balance when the ground shook with the creature's fall, and moved back, wary of any others that might be in the nest behind it.
Are you all right?
Fortunately. The enchanter unclasped his cloak and joined his second, though I will have a memento of its appetite. He cast the counterspell to make his companion visible again. Being unseen had provided little, if any, advantage against a creature that relied on its olfactory senses, then displayed the gaping hole in his breeches just above his boot. That was too close. We'd better move before a parent finds us.
Let's see what it was eating first.
Gingerly, he made a wide berth of the dead dragonling, then poked his head through the bushes. Seeing what was left of a woman horribly eviscerated within the nest, he immediately jumped back, turned, and retched. Judging that the sight was far from palatable and eager to be leaving the clearing, Gaewon cast his senses in every direction for the parent dragon. Taking a second look at their immediate surroundings and feeling Calron's shackles very near, he noted the clearing had been made by the dragonling's maturing weapon, a vile caustic acid. And then he saw them.
The gods damn.
He went over and inspected the corroded remains of the iron shackles lying in an acid-eaten pock in the ground.
He used the dragon's acid to burn them off.
And why is this dragonling alone out here? Perhaps this circle of bushes wasn't a nest, only a hideout from where it could strike at prey. Cluff wrestled control of his nausea and leaned against a tree as Gaewon stood over the dead creature and looked puzzled.
If you're through, let's go.
Gaewon, it was eating the druid woman.
Gods.
Hearing movement behind them, he turned to face it. A shadow fell across the clearing. Only stare in horror at the giant serpent that raised its head over him. It hadn't noticed Cluff, only seen the enchanter standing next to its dead hatchling. He could not move, and even if he could, there was no direction he could run. Helpless, he watched with some distant part of his mind as the male dragon drew itself up to its full height and made to spew death upon him. This is performed for a live audience. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2025. Character voices for episode 26 are performed by Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H. the Great and Powerful.
The Sextology of novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author at a discount. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Atlas Mason, Florian Sorrell of Tiny Music, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Mix Kit of Victoria, Australia, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.